What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast taken to extra time every time. Coming up, EFL in the FA Cup, slim picking shot-wise. Blooming heck, the new Oxford manager is a surprise. And beefs, grudges and local pride. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we're back with you on a Monday after a weekend that was dominated by the FA Cup, which we are going to talk about. We're going to look ahead to the weekend's Football League action too. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by Sam Parkin. You okay, Sam?
Very good. Good to see you both.
Yeah, always. Adrian Clark's back with us too. Clarky, how you doing?
Yeah. Ready to go. Let's do this.
Let's do it. Before we do, let me remind you that our partners Quinbet have a new offer where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+. And for new UK customers only, visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling.
Yeah, sorry, Matt. I should have said I was going to text you this morning to say that I didn't really fancy coming on the pod, a la Josh Sargent, but I decided against it. I didn't want to down tools on a Monday morning.
Topical, and well done for getting Sam's favourite phrase in as well. Yeah, Josh Sargent apparently wanting to force a move from Norwich. We shall see whether he is lucky in that pursuit. Let's start by talking about some FA Cup games, ones that we saw mostly, and a shock as well. Sam, I'll start with you, who watched Charlton eventually swept aside by Chelsea at the Valley. Cracking atmosphere. I've just been watching the Chelsea TV highlights. You felt maybe the occasion got to the Addicks at points.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line, isn't there? Because the reality is Charlton, although they're in the Championship, they got a lot of players that obviously were in League One last year and they got up via the playoffs. So I don't think we can suggest that there's not a vast gap between Charlton and Chelsea. There's a big gap between Chelsea and all the Championship sides. But I think it's greater when you're looking at Charlton. They recruited the best players in League One, essentially, to come up. Had a few injury issues as well. Young Goff. I keep wanting to call him Goff. I hope that's his name, the centre-half who played right-sided centre-half. I think that was his third professional game, give or take. So, and it just felt that because this fixture hadn't been played for so long, there's been so many years out of the Premier League for Charlton, it just felt like, you know, it felt like a real kind of underdog going up against a huge Premier League outfit. And I just felt that they could have maybe made a slightly better fist of it. That's just how it felt watching. It felt like, you know, the ball was in the box early and it was panic stations and, you know, the crowd was great because it was so vociferous, but it just felt like, yeah, it felt like there was a huge gap between the two sides. So yeah,
well, Sleeman was good, wasn't he? I thought he was quite a bit of a handful at times.
Yeah, well, I felt that Liam Rossini had a big decision to make at half time because Badia Shield had been really poor for 45 minutes and Liburn had been working in that channel and Chelsea kind of in a back three the majority of the time. He was on the left hand side and Liburn was obviously showing his athleticism and getting in at times. So yeah, that was one thing. And to their credit, you know, I'm not bashing Charlton by any stretch because we saw so many League One Championship sides get torn to shreds in the FA Cup at the weekend. But they kept it tight relatively in that first half. We know how difficult they can be to break down Charlton and how compact Nathan Jones makes them. But yeah, I thought it was a little bit of a capitulation towards the end, not helped by Amari Bell and Campbell obviously going off, who could be missing for some weeks if they're muscle injuries. So they're a little bit depleted by the end and Chelsea brought on real quality to get the job done. But yeah, to soften what I was saying and to clarify it, it's just going to be a season where if they survive, it's going to be by the odd point. So the focus has to be on that. And that's the reality. They're in the Championship, but they're not going to be mid-table. They're going to be fighting for every point to try and stay in the division. And I hope they do. It's a bit of a dip at the moment, results-wise, but they're in a decent enough position to stay in the Championship, which would be an incredible achievement.
Yeah, they got back-to-back home games next. They're pretty good at the Valley. Sheffield United and Derby visiting, so they'll hope to pick up some points there. Clarky, would you copy and paste a lot of what Sam said about Charlton for Portsmouth? I didn't see this one, so tell me how they got on.
I would absolutely copy and paste the atmosphere. The fans are always brilliant, aren't they, at Fratton Park? And even when they were 4-1 down, they were fully getting behind the team. It was a tremendous sort of effort, I think, from the supporters. Look, Pompey started the game well. on the front foot. They didn't come, or they did, didn't come, but they didn't arrive at the game trying to be negative and to low block Arsenal. They thought, nah, we're going to get in your faces and we're going to go on the front foot where we can. And they got the early goal. Nice finish. Well, it's an easy rebound finish from Colby Bishop. It was a well-worked move. Over the course of the game, they had 13 shots. There's a lot of teams that haven't had 13 shots against Arsenal this season. And there's also a lot of teams, I'd say most teams that Arsenal played this season, haven't managed 5 shots on target, which is what Portsmouth achieved. So, you know, Kepa was called into action with 2 really good saves, actually, away to his left. So, yeah, they carried that threat. The issue was they can't defend set pieces. And we know that Arsenal are pretty useful at those. 14 set piece concessions in the Championship. It's the second most behind Sheffield Wednesday. So that tells you they've got a problem. And they set up zonally. And basically, Gabriel Martinelli, for 3 of the goals, ran from the far post to the near post and got the first contact. He scored with 2 of them. And from the other one, there was an own goal that resulted. So they didn't learn from their mistakes. They also switched off from a quick free kick for the other goal of the game, which was actually a really nice goal. So, yeah, look, I think they can come out of pride. There'll be regrets over the way they defended the dead ball situations. But in open play, on the ball, I thought Portsmouth were good. Off the ball, not great. The standout, well, one of the standouts for me was Segacic. Thought he was a real live wire. We know he's having a good season, but he was a constant menace. And he was one of the reasons Ben White had to be substituted, because he was on a yellow card and he was, you know, he's running at him every time. So, yeah, there were positives in defeat.
Yeah, 2 different approaches from Charlton and Portsmouth. And I think it was the right game plan for both, actually. Charlton trying to be compact, sit in, frustrate Chelsea. We know that was their kryptonite for many a year, it would seem, how to break down a low block. And Portsmouth are one of the best pressing teams in the Championship. So that was quite refreshing to see that as well from the off yesterday.
All right, well, they got Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend, so that it's going to be an easier afternoon for them, one would think. Now, I was at the Eco Power Stadium, first time I've ever been there, see Doncaster produce a stirring comeback against Southampton. Neither of these teams in any kind of form at all, without a winning 6 coming into it. And Southampton raced into a 3-0 lead by half time. Bragg, Archer and Matsuki, some nice goals actually as well. Archer got fouled, free kick wasn't given, so he just picked himself up, ran on and scored. And Matsuki with a lovely header after good work from Tom Fellows. But Doncaster, excellent in the second half. Matty Pearson and Gibson got some goals to rattle Southampton. Can either of you guess who Southampton brought off the bench to wrestle back control of the game? A talented midfielder who I'd never seen before. The Southampton fans absolutely loved him and they were getting bossed all over the pitch until this chap came on and just kept the ball from everybody.
I've watched the highlights, but I've had a very early start here. So
Brazilian. Summer signing, came in from Germany, Leo Cienza.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely magnificent he was.
Oh, well, I've told you about him. He can play. He can play. But he's inconsistent. But when he's on it, he can look after the ball. He is lovely.
Well, that was, I think, a really important win for Tondorekka, particularly. I was listening to a Southampton pod on the way to the game and they were not particularly having him. And as I say, they haven't won in a while. Doncaster, miles away from safety at the bottom of League One. You wonder if this might be some sort of catalyst for them. But yeah, based on what I saw, I wouldn't expect them to be in the position that they are without a win in the league since the end of November. Way back on Friday night, let's skirt over this one. Wrexham beating Forest on penalties. Apparently Ryan Reynolds was at this game. Forest were beyond crap for most of the match. Sam, these two in the same division next season, one way or another?
No, don't be too disheartened by recent events, Matt. Don't be fooled by West Ham's victory over a QPR team who did what they do in the FA Cup. That is a great game, wasn't it? I mean, the goal of the weekend, was it Hudson-Odoi's? It's got to be up there, hasn't it, to take and finish in one motion on the full. Breathtakingly good. It feels like Wrexham are back to what they have been, kind of the entertainers with some high-scoring games in recent times. And, yeah, that little change in the system that Clarkey spoke through maybe last pod or the one before, getting an additional forward player in the team rather than having the three-man midfield. Is probably having a little bit of an effect on that. But no, I thought it was a brilliant game, and credit to Forest for actually the way they fought back in the second half, because they were second best in the first period. Brilliant ball in, wasn't it, for the third? Dobson, yeah. I think, for Scar's header. And that you felt at that point that that was going to be the end of the tie. So, yeah, and another chapter in the Wrexham mm-hmm. story, but their focus will be, of course, as we know, trying to force themselves into the reckoning, which I would have had my money on Birmingham being the ones, but now Wrexham have got a hell of an opportunity, probably, given that it's quite open, the Championship, and there's maybe going to be one or two surprises in the makeup of the playoffs.
Yeah, well, because they can score goals. They've got a chance of winning games, haven't they? You know, home and away, they carry that threat.
No Kiefer Moore here, which I think Forrest thought brilliant, because he always scores against Forrest, but they got three goals anyway.
Yeah, exactly. They have faced the most shots in the Championship, Wrexham, so they're the opposite of watertight. But what I really like about them is that when they have shots, and they have a lot of shots, it doesn't take 30 passes to get there. It usually take they win it, and probably within five passes, they're in. Do you know what I mean? They're very good at sort of turning those turnovers into goal opportunities quickly. And that really suits someone like Ollie Rathbone, who's on fire at the moment. He makes those runs from slightly deeper positions. Very, very good at it. And these are good times at Wrexham. Very good times. If they can, I don't know if they need to improve their defensive personnel or not. I think they probably could. If they did, I think they would have a real shot at it.
I have an early start. It was Dom Higham, not Dan Scar, the flying Wrexham defender who scored that lovely far post header.
Yeah, I was going to say well done to him, but that would be disingenuous. Let's finish in the FA Cup with Mansfield. Plenty of props to Macclesfield, obviously, who is a non-EFL club and not our concern. But Mansfield produced the other big shock of the weekend, 4-2 at Sheffield United on Sunday. Nice little cup story here as well, Sam, wasn't there? Nigel Clough against the club who somewhat harshly sacked him all those years ago. And Lewis Reed against the club where he started. Nigel Clough had given him his Sheffield United debut. He got that stunning half volley. His other one was slightly deflected, but yeah, big win. 5,000 travelling Stags fans. Everything you want to tick off your FA Cup bingo card here.
Yeah, it was great. And you could count on Nigel Clough probably being the one manager not to make wholesale changes. That was pretty much his 11. Get out there, lads, and do the business. And it looked very comfortable, didn't it, for a spell when they went to 4-1. But I suppose, and we saw it across the weekend, when the Premier League teams and Championship teams did flex their muscles, the gulf was apparent. But Mansfield's first team against Sheffield United's reserves, that's a much better fit, I suppose, for a game and for the potential of an upset. So they did brilliantly. Yeah, Reid, I believe, is Sheffield United's youngest ever player. So that's an incredible story. The first in particular was a beauty. Akins, obviously, perennially in Nigel Clough's side for the last decade, getting a goal. But Reece Oates doing all the hard work, and he was the standout player here. 4-3, I think he is now, Reece Oates, since he's got back to full fitness, and he's tearing teams apart. And his goal and assist here was really eye-catching, and naturally Chris Wilder flexed his muscles in terms of the substitutes he could bring on and try and get them back into the game, and they very nearly forced extra time. But yeah, brilliant win, and they've turned a bit of a corner, Mansfield. I'm not going to suggest that they're going to fire themselves up to the table into the reckoning, but who knows, next season or two, with the right recruitment, they could be knocking on the door of the Championship, which would be really refreshing to see.
It wasn't a poor Sheffield United team either. Like
their squad retain. Is good, isn't it? When you look at the 11, I thought that yesterday. It's a good squad.
Yeah. Very good squad. They only had 21% of possession, only had 9 touches in the box. But when you can score from outside the box like Louis Reed did, and do what Reece Oates did with his running power, you've got a chance, haven't you? So yeah, it's a sensational away win. Almost a derby, isn't it, as well? I mean, not much distance between Mansfield and Sheffield U, so that would have meant a lot, I think, to the fans.
Yeah, good on them. Draw for the fourth round is tonight as we record on Monday, so you may well know, listener, who the Stags have got. And now there was some league action this weekend past, but little of it made much of an impression on us. So we'll have a brief word on a big win for Stockport against Huddersfield at Edgeley Park. Kyle Wharton's 96th minute winner, lifting the Hatters above the Terriers. We should give Stockport the props before I ask Sam whether the pressure's back on Lee Grant for the 1,000th time this season, Clarkie. So as I say, yeah, big win for them. So tight in League One, but they are nicely ensconced in the playoff places.
Yeah, I rate them. I really do. When I saw them in the flesh, I thought, yeah, good football inside. Use the full width of the pitch nicely. Have that goal threat. Good back three. Yeah, there's a lot to like about Stockport, but they've had a bit of a bad run. They've got beaten in front of their own fans too often of late. I think the last two now they've won at home, but prior to that, I think they'd lost three and drawn one. So they really did need this win. It was obviously, it took a while. It was a dominant performance. They had all the best chances in the game, but what a cross. What a cross it was from Okeke, the substitute, out on the right-hand side. I don't know if Ollie Norwood meant to find him with a switch. It was an unreal switch, but it didn't look like it meant to find him. But anyway, he did. And then and he makes a difference, Ollie Norwood. But the cross from Okeke was unbelievable. And then the two strikers were fighting over it, weren't they, at the far stick? Was it Wootton? Was it Andreasen? I think Wootton's got the credit. But yeah, what a lovely way to win a game in front of that big bank of home supporters at Edgeley Park. So yeah, huge win.
Yeah, the assister, Okeke, hasn't played every week, but he's just back from Walsall. He's one of the three that have been recalled from Walsall, so straight into the team and supplied that delivery. And I'm glad that you've both said it's Wootton's goal, because Andreasen, who kind of wheeled off to the left, didn't really raise an arm. And I think he got injured, didn't he, in the process, Wootton, or certainly went down needing treatment. It looked like it was him that got the all-important touch. And on Norwood, he was kind of player of the match in a couple of the things I looked at. Most passes, most touches, second most tackles, which surprised me. So he looks like he's really back on form. And on Huddersfield, we'll probably mention it later, but yeah, there will still be pressure because there's been a lot of noise despite the upturn in results recently for Lee Grant, but having to do it now without Leo Carsadine as well, who's obviously moved to Middlesbrough on a permanent from Chelsea. He's been their talisman in this recent upsurge in results. So yeah, his goals are going to be missed. I was going to call it the McAlpine, but you can fill the gap there, Matt, for me.
Probably can't. John Smith's Gal Farm has gone through a few.
The John Smith
over the years, hasn't it? It'll always be the McAlpine.
Yeah, it should be, shouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They'll be back.
Rolled off the tongue there.
They'll be back there this week, taking on Rotherham in the Virtue Trophy before they go to Burton at the weekend. We are going to get to doing some previews next. Eric Ramsey is the new West Brom boss. His first game is against Borough on Friday at the Hawthorns. He's 34. He's been working in the USA, ex-Man United youth coach. Anybody got anything else to say on this? I struggle to find much inspiration when it comes to talking about West Brom, if I'm honest.
Floor's yours, Clarkie. Go on.
Well, I mean, when you've gone for a young manager and it didn't work, to go for another young manager, it feels slightly risky. I've interviewed Eric Ramsey. It never saw the light of day because he was worried about something that he'd said in the interview, and we ended up not publishing it. But I interviewed him shortly after, I think, he'd left Manchester United. He was part of that sort of coaching group in the background. Very studious guy, a real climber. He's worked for so many clubs already in his sort of fledgling career. Clearly, he's very good at what he does, but he's got that ambition and he's worked his way towards this point. Let's see. I mean, I didn't see much of Minnesota, so I don't really know.
I'm just looking at their squad. There's literally nobody I've heard of, but there's some great MLS names. Jefferson Diaz, David DJ Taylor, Thomas Chanchelet. Yeah, it's all ticking a lot of boxes for me, MLS-wise.
Yeah, he's a typical modern coach that's come through the sort of academy system, worked his way up. So good luck to him. But yeah, I don't know whether that would have been my first pick if I was West Brom.
Right, let's look to the weekend's games then, and that links nicely because we've got another new manager to talk about. Oxford v Bristol City is the game. Matt Bloomfield is the new Oxford United manager. He watched from the stand as his new team edged past MK Dons on pens in the FA Cup on Friday night. As I say, first game in charge against Bristol City this weekend. It's a very, very good job for him to get. What do you make of this, Sam, as an appointment?
Yeah, maybe a little bit surprised that his next job's in the Championship, given that he only had, what, a dozen odd games at Luton at the level. But that said, that wasn't enough to truly gauge, you know, if he was going to be someone that could manage really successfully in the second tier. But listen, like Adrian just said there, he's got something about him, Matt, incredibly diligent, I think driven, really motivated. And when he had the opportunity with an improved budget and players at Wickham, his team was excellent to watch. No question about that. He changed a side at Wickham who had played one way and one way only for the best part of a decade. Maybe perennially had played one way. So to change that, and it did take a little bit of time. I remember seeing them when they were a little bit caught in between the two styles, and it was a little bit problematic. But when he got it going, they were a really good watch. So I think, again, looking at what Oxford have done so far in the window, Miles Pert-Harris, good technical footballer. Jamie Donnelly, the same. Lovely left foot. He's going to want to receive it between the lines. Not particularly physical, either of those guys, despite probably both being around 6 foot. And they've recruited in that manner across the last 6 months or so in the summer window. So it feels to me like Oxford are going to stick with that, wanting to play a better calibre of football. So it's going to be interesting because it's a pressurised situation. But I'd be very surprised if, you know, it's going to be akin to what we've seen for Oxford for a lot of the season, which has again been a lot of players behind the ball, counter-attack. I think that they've got greater wishes than that, the hierarchy. And I think Matt Bloomfield has shown that he wants his sides to play football. It's not fair to probably judge him on those 12 games at Luton in the Championship, but he just couldn't get it going this year. Obviously, there's been, I think, a lot gone on at Luton. I think a lot of problems, which Jack Wilshere, I'm sure, is still kind of finding out about at the moment and trying to make his way through, and he's doing a pretty fine job of it, getting them playing some better football. So yeah, it's always a risk, isn't it, attached to an appointment, but it's as risky for Matt than it is for the club as it is for the club, sorry, because, you know, his reputation, he has to kind of in the Championship get this one right and quickly, I think.
All right, Bristol City, they also made an appointment, Clarkie, in the summer that some were scratching their heads at, including us. Here they are, 2 points off the playoffs. They've just smashed Watford in the FA Cup, and they've re-signed George Earthy on loan from West Ham. Do you think they can break into the top six?
Yeah, definitely. Well, they've been in the top six for a lot of this season, haven't they? They're in the mix. They're one of, I don't know, 8 teams, 10 teams maybe that have got their eye on fifth or sixth. You know, that's how I see it. And they've got a chance. Obviously, that was a morale boost in winning the cup, wasn't it? 5-1 against Watford. Emile Reese getting him a hat trick. And they have got goal scorers. That's what I will say about Bristol City. Reese will get you goals. Scott Twine will get you goals. Mometi is the same. They're sort of consistent contributors, all of them, aren't they? So if one isn't doing it, you've often got the other two chipping in, which definitely helps. I quite fancied them in this game, I've got to say. Bristol City have been really good against the bottom half teams. 29 of their 39 points have been against bottom half outfits. And away to sides in the bottom nine, they've got a perfect record, 5 wins from 5. So Oxford might have their work cut out. Bristol City, just a quick one on them. A lot of people just say Struber's this guy who presses. You know, it's all about the press. And they are really good at it. They've scored, I think, 6 goals from high turnovers. But it's in the middle of the pitch, not necessarily high up where they're a nightmare to play against. It's when they get, and you get into the midfield, they're on you, and they've easily won or regained possession more times than any other in the Championship this season in the middle third. So yeah, that's their undisputed strength. And obviously from there, Twine and Mometi and the rest of them go and do the business. So we'll see how it goes. But I think Bristol City will be eyeing up a fast start because they're good at that, and possibly 3 points to put them closer to the playoffs.
We shall see. This is a game I'm looking forward to. Coventry against Leicester, a classic. What the EFL? Is this a derby fixture? Yeah, one of Saturday's early kickoff. Sam, you're going to take care of Coventry for us. Lost at Stoke in the FA Cup. 3 defeats in 4, 1 win in 6. What's happened? And is it better to have a wobble now than in April/May?
What's happened? It's a bloody tough league, isn't it? And all of a sudden, given their...
that's exactly it, yeah.
In the first few months of the season, you all of a sudden get parachuted into this place where everyone wants to beat you, and it's everyone's big game. So they're having to deal with that, and They had a brilliant second half to last season, but there was no guarantee they were going to be automatic promotion hopefuls this year. So they're on this kind of perch now where everyone's trying to knock them off. And then you factor in that Thomas Asante's not been available. Thomas has had injury and now suspension. Torp's been out. Hadji Wright's lost his mojo. I think Radoni's still working his way back to fitness. I think there's a variety of things that have affected them. Sakamoto, he's been off it last couple of months. So what did they need and what did we anticipate them doing? Going and making a couple of signings, and they've done that already with Yang. Obviously, he was a little bit indifferent at Pompey early part of this season, but good at QPR, on loan from Spurs, and SA is kind of one of those loanies signings you look at and think he could really be the business for them. So maybe they'll look at getting, I think they'll probably maybe try and do a centre forward as well if the finances are there. And Hadji Wright's obviously misfiring a little bit. Yeah, and it's the away form really that's affected them. They've still been able to get over the line in the games at home. A couple of narrow 1-0s, if memory serves, the more recent games. But yeah, if they continue to do that, I'm sure the away form will turn again once they get their players back. They were a bit off it at Birmingham, I think, in defensive terms. Didn't see that solidity. Rushworth, obviously, the concession of the third, I think he wouldn't have been too happy about. But I'm sure they'll turn that around. The home form is scintillating. And this was 0-0, let's remember, at Leicester early part of the season. I don't imagine Leicester will shape up like a lot of the sides trying to frustrate. I think they'll have a bit more of a go. Didn't work out particularly well when Coventry faced Ipswich earlier in the season, but Ipswich are a more confident side at the moment. So I think this is a good one for Coventry because there is no love lost here. I think I do remember a little bit of needle prior to the games recently, and maybe it's an opportunity with a big crowd with all eyes on them to put down a bit of a marker. I don't think it's the worst game here for Coventry after that cup defeat.
Yeah, and you mentioned Thomas Asante and Torp, a chance that both of them might be available for this one, apparently. Leicester-wise, Clarkie, not signing Mikhail Antonio, he picked up an injury whilst training with them. I would say if there was an award for manager who's able to get a result when he really, really needs one, Marty Cifuentes would walk away with it. 3 wins in 4 there, comfortably in mid-table, nice win in the FA Cup at Cheltenham too. So the pressure on him, at least, has eased a little.
It's eased a little bit, but... The club's still in a little bit of a mess, no doubt about that. It's not a happy place. No one's really satisfied with how it's going at the moment. So, you know, this is a big game for them. You know, don't want to go to Coventry and get pumped. Then the pressure will be back on Marty Cifuentes. I live smack bang in the middle of Coventry and Leicester, so I know about the rivalry. Most people where I live support Leicester, but the Cov fans really hate Leicester. Leicester fans, not really that bothered about Coventry. They're a little bit big time in that regard. See them as massive rivals, but you won't find a Leicester fan that wants Coventry to go up, that's for sure. The reason I would fancy Coventry here as well is that Leicester don't keep clean sheets. The last one was in that game that Sam referenced, and that was in September, 20 matches ago. That was the last clean sheet Leicester had. And I'll rattle off some numbers for the goals they've conceded in their last 5 away games. 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. That's a problem, isn't it? And you know, I think Akoli might have to come in for Vestergaard, who hurt his ankle the other day. Nelson's doing all right. They've got great wingers. I love Fatawu. I love Mavadidi. But it's not... They're not a great team at the moment. The form's not great. Even that you referenced those results. Was it 3 wins in 4? In the league, in their last 4 games, they've created under 1 expected goal in all of them. So they're not exactly blowing teams away. They're not creating stacks of chances. So yeah, and they've been fragile this season defensively. So I would absolutely fancy Cov here.
All right. What on earth, listener, could make you think of Jamie Morley? For me, the only answer is Millwall versus Watford. He played for both, but it's still
big
on.
Agent these days, isn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd think I'd go for Sean Dyche, wouldn't you, in this played for both inspired memory. But Morley won't feature when the Hornets and the Lions meet this weekend. He's 54 years old, be reasonable. Who's more likely to go up, Clarkie, out of these two teams? Just a place and 2 points between them in the table.
Yeah, don't think either's going to go up, if I'm honest. Maybe Watford, I don't know. I mean... Watford's
won their last 4.
Watford's, Yeah, they're doing well. They're doing really well. Obviously, they got thrashed by Bristol City in the cup, didn't they? But they did make a lot of changes. Yeah, I don't think they'll go up, Watford or Millwall. But I like the look of Watford. Obviously, they've got to adjust now because Max Alain, the defender, has gone back to Man City, hasn't he? He was a regular alongside Pollock at centre-back, went straight in the City team and just played back-to-back games, scored, didn't he, at the weekend against Exeter. But yeah, look, they're unbeaten in 10 at home. They had a great Christmas. And they've got some really good players in form. I mean, Imran Lusa, he's having a fabulous season. Kind of under the radar for everyone, maybe except Watford fans. But from central midfield, you know, he's created 49 chances, 30 of those in open play. He's got the highest expected goals for the team. He's had the most shots. He's scored six. He's made six. And that's only just a part of his game. He's also a sort of all-action midfielder that will get on the ball and win it as well. So he's playing great. Jack Vertadze's back fit and available at 10. And the wingers, Ince, obviously got a hat-trick recently. Marmer is dangerous. So, yeah, they've got good forward players. So, yeah, we'll see how they go against Millwall. A lot of it might depend on what the score is at half time, and I'll explain that. If matches ended at half time, Watford would be 20th in the Championship. If they only, if we only played second halves, they would be top. Quite clearly, and they've only conceded 8 second half goals all season. So they are a team that finish really strongly in matches. So that's obviously testament to the bench, to the fitness, to the depth of the squad as well. So yeah, if Millwall going to have a chance here, they might have to be a goal or two up at half time.
Lol at me last week, Sam, saying that Millwall would fancy their chances of a cup set at Burnley. Final score, Burnley 5, Millwall 1. Alex Neil said, it's not going to take precedence over our league campaign. Yeah, no, you know what, Alex. Only one win in 7 in their last away games in the Championship would suggest that it is a bit of an issue for them on the road. Do you see them getting anything here?
I can, yeah, I can. And yeah, it kind of fell into the category of neither team fully focused, wanting to desperately get through in the cup because they both made multiple changes. A lot of young lads involved for Millwall. You know where their priorities lie, and that's the reality, isn't it? A plum draw in the fourth round of the FA Cup pales into insignificance when you're talking about a potential promotion to the Premier League. That's a certainty there. So yeah, a lot of young lads involved for Millwall at the weekend. I suppose the one plus was Coburn coming back on, scored a brilliant goal, 1v1, and lifted it over the goalkeeper. It was only a consolation, but a brilliant goal. And they have got, and this will be a contradiction here given what I just said, but they have got a lot better depth this season. They've had a tough time of injuries at Millwall, with obviously Aziz missing some football, Luongo, who's been out long term, who started brilliantly this season, one or two others as well. So that has been a little bit problematic. But no, I do fancy them in this game. And it was in my head yesterday when I was looking at this, I just think I'd seen Millwall beat Watford quite a lot recently. And it's 5 wins in 7 games. 1-2 and drawn one of the last 3 at Vicarage Road. One stat that will get probably Millwall fans shouting at their mobile phones or whatever as they're listening to this. They haven't played, Clarkie, you'll like this, or you'll be concerned for them, any of the top 8 away from home as of yet. So 16 of their games have been against bottom half teams, and they've only played 10 games against top half teams. That's a problem. I think that's a problem.
Yeah.
When you're thinking about the 5 margins and you're thinking about how Millwall have just fallen at the last hurdle, most notably in that match against Blackburn a few seasons ago when they could have made it into the playoffs. You've got to go to all the best teams in the division. And you've just spoken about their woes away from home. So it could ultimately come down to the games against the bigger hitters. But I, at this juncture, would like to say to both of you, I will have Millwall to finish above Watford. No problem. Sportsman's bet for the end of season shindig.
All right. I don't have a strong enough opinion to go for Watford, but just because I like a bet, maybe I'll take you up on that. Yeah.
All right. I'll say they'll finish level on points in that case then.
I will give you Watford and the tie, Matt. That's the kind of guy I am.
Okay, I appreciate it. We'll revisit that at the end of the season, I'm sure. Some big games coming up in League One this weekend. We'll have a look at those next. And two of the top three in League One, that's a lot of numbers, meet in Yorkshire, Bradford hosting Cardiff. 6 points and a Lincoln between them in the table. Sam, Bradford's game at the weekend fell foul of the weather. So they haven't played since the 4th of Jan. We spoke about them last week. I mean, you don't want to be losing the momentum, do you? That's probably pretty frustrating for Graham Alexander, isn't it? When a game bites the dust when your team are banging form.
Yeah, maybe not ideal, but an opportunity to focus fully a few days earlier on what's probably the biggest game of the season to date, isn't it? And yeah, they're in brilliant form, albeit they were thumped to what, Mansfield, was it, relatively recently? But, you know, the home form is just incredible. A little bit along the lines of what Clarkey just said there, they are one of the highest scoring first half teams, Bradford, levels out a little bit in the second half. And the flip side, I don't know if Clarkey noticed this, but Cardiff have scored 30 of their 43 goals in the second half of matches. And I would imagine that Bradford being a fast starting team, obviously, but the type of football that they play, putting teams under pressure, especially at home, and Cardiff on the flip side, it's grinding teams down. So we'll see if that plays a part of the weekend. Got to remember that Bradford won well at Cardiff. They were 3-0 up after about 50 minutes. I remember being doing the TV that day and watching the score come in. And I think I'd reiterated a few times that this was a really difficult game for Cardiff, given the profile of Bradford and the physicality and the set piece threat and what have you. So it was how it proved on that afternoon. We'll see this weekend if lightning strikes twice. And it's those two tens, you know, Poynton and Sarsavic, who the onus is on to carry the fight forward and onward for Bradford in the absence of someone to kind of hang your hat on up front. Andy Cook, obviously been a bit of a bit part player this season because of injury and what have you. Swan they've got, and Humphreys is the other one who's had the odd good game. But again, it's that setup that Graham Alexander changed to midpoint of last season, which is still proving really vital. But this would be a good game. I imagine it'll be a huge crowd. And if the Bradford fans are starting to believe that this could be another promotion, they should come out and really get behind the team, because in the big matches last season, they carried them across that line. And who knows? There's always one team. Well, we've seen Wrexham with obviously the huge resources do the back-to-back-to-backs. Bradford could, you know, achieve another promotion. This would be incredible.
Cardiff in decent nick, obviously. Clarkey is the league leaders. I haven't lost in League One, or have only lost once in League One since November. But that defeat was quite a similar game to this, right? It didn't come off the back of a League Cup quarterfinal against Chelsea, but losing at Lincoln, a warning, a blueprint of what not to do kind of hit thing here.
Maybe they can get roughed up a little bit, you know, because what they want to do is play the pretty football. We know that. And they can out-football any team in the division. Cardiff City have got some great, talented players. But what they also like to do is press. They're, you know, very hungry, energetic team. They're young, got good legs, and they'll get after teams. And what Bradford did brilliantly in that game that Sam's referencing, where they won 3-1. They played through the press, and they found loads of space to isolate the Cardiff defenders. And some of the Cardiff defenders can be a little bit rash at times. I mean, I remember Gabriel Osho giving away an unbelievable penalty, was sliding in late on a player. It was crazy. But, you know, they're not perfect at the back. They, you know, they've got one or two mistakes in them, Cardiff, if you put them under pressure. And I think Bradford are the sort of team that will put them under pressure. Maybe it's telling. I don't know. We'll have to see after this weekend. But Cardiff have lost three of their five games against the top six. They've only won once. And that was a close one at home to Huddersfield. So even though they're on this good run, they haven't taken many scalps off the teams around them. So we'll see. You know, they don't let in that many goals, in fairness to them. I think Kean Ashford might be back for this one. Maybe Dylan Lawler as well. So, yeah, it's a great game. Really, really good game, this. And it might give us an indication of who's going to sort of stay the course at the end of this season. I think if you're Brian Barry Murphy, you're looking to your wingers and your attacking midfield and saying, right, second half of the season, can we give Youssef Salak a little bit more help? Can we take the burden away from him? Because at times you think, is Salak, it really is the main man when it comes to getting the goals, then they'll need others to chip in.
Somebody else needs to pick up the slack, you might say. All right, old friends.
One of your best.
Thanks. Awesome. Yeah, they're always better when they're off the cuff rather than rambling on about Jamie Morley. Old friends reunited in Lancashire, Wigan hosting Bolton in a local derby given added spice by the fact it's master versus apprentice. Ryan Lowe facing his old assistant, Steve Schumacher. Lowe really enjoyed that win at his old club, Preston, at the weekend, although it did invoke the ire of a local in his post. Match pitch side interview. I'm sure we all enjoyed that. We can't repeat what was said, but there we go. Yeah, that leaves Wigan in good stead coming into this one then, Clarky, does it? Because they haven't been brilliant in the league.
Oh, no. I mean, they feel like the total mid-table team, don't they, Wigan, really? Don't get beat that often, don't score many goals, but they're quite well organised. But because the teams at the bottom are improving, they're now only 3 points clear of fourth bottom. So every match is really important for them in the coming weeks and months, but they've got to find a way to score more goals. They sort of took a slightly more front foot approach maybe against Preston. They went for it in the cup and they got that 1-0 win, which they milked, you know, with the celebrations afterwards. But I don't mind that. It's, you know, you've got to enjoy these moments, haven't you? They've lost Paul Mullin. He got recalled by Wrexham, so that'd be interesting to see what they do there. But they've not scored more than 2 goals in any of their last 16 games. And more worrying than that, they've not scored more than 1 goal in 14 of their last 16 games, which is puts a lot of pressure on their defence, which is good. They've got a very good keeper, Sam Tickle, third best save percentage in the league. You've got a decent back three. Is it Fox, Ameson and Carragher, Jamie's son? You know, they're doing very well, but they're not scoring. They're not scoring enough goals at all. You know, want a bit more from Costello, maybe Callum Wright and stuff. So we'll see. Big derby, isn't it? Wigan Bolton. They've sort of won one against Preston. Can they see off Bolton, who have definitely been a bit fragile on the road this season? And there's payback because they got battered. Well, Ryan Lowe's team got battered 4-1, didn't they, at the Tough Sheet earlier on this season. What I will say is that there's an academy kid that's come through in recent weeks. I don't know if you've seen this. 18-year-old Harrison Bettoni. He got the winner against Preston. And in the league, he's scored 3 times already in less than 300 minutes. So Harrison Bettoni, bit of an attacking midfielder, I think. He could be the guy that sort of maybe gives them that injection that they need at the moment in terms of going forward.
Bolton needs something too, don't they, Sam? Beating Peterborough at the weekend, that made it no wins in 4. The goals have dried up, but sometimes a game like this can be a catalyst to get your mojo back.
It can, absolutely. I would suggest, in the aftermath of a pretty dismal defeat at Peterborough, that will be one of the most sombre training grounds across the country this morning, Bolton, because there is pressure mounting on Stephen Schumacher, friend of the pod, got a lot of time for him. I think he's an excellent young manager. But I think the reality is, you look at the league table this morning, you're 7 points behind the aforementioned Bradford, 9 points behind Lincoln. That's what gets supporters' ire and frustration when you expect you to be amongst the automatic promotion race, and at the moment they're not that. And yeah, no wins in 4. The goals that they conceded at Peter, I mean, not helped, I don't think, by having a bit of a standing goalkeeper in Tyler Miller. I think Teddy Sharman Lowe's been pretty good for them this season, but he was out ill. I think Miller could have done better with 2 of the goals. Johnston, really poor at centre half, could have done better certainly for one of Posh's. But I mean, Peter have been unbelievable since Luke Williams has gone in there, so it's a tough game, but I thought the level of the performance was really poor. And 2 substitutions in the first half, adding to my sentiment that it's probably not the best place to be this morning. Gale and Sheehan taken off in the last minute of the first half, and he made another change at half time. So I'm sure they're watching the video nasty this morning. There's probably a little bit of soul searching and trying to get themselves back together for what is a massive game. And you said it, Matt. Yeah, I just thought that I'd see Bolton being, and they are one of the most creative sides in the division, but the goals return doesn't show you that. They're third for XG, scored 31 from an XG of over 41. So the goals have dried up, I believe. Burstow hasn't scored since the 4th of October. He missed a 1v1 at Posh. Cozy Adubri, only 2 assists in his last 10, no goals whatsoever. Dalby got the goal at the weekend. He's scored 3 times this season, all off the bench. So, yeah, no informed front players. And I think that was absolutely the topic of conversation the early part of the campaign, just how good they were going forward. So all of a sudden, with them misfiring and away from home having a massive issue, there's a lot to sort out there in a short space of time. So we'll see. Probably needs a January where he's given a little bit of help as well, because it's too early to be making a judgment on his future. But if they don't get into the playoffs, let's say, then, you know, that's a job that hasn't gone particularly well.
All right, the League Two game that we're going to focus on is Chesterfield against Bromley. Bromley, the leaders. Chesterfield, playoff hopefuls, Clarkie. I can't really get a read on them, though. I'm hoping you're going to help me out. No wins in three after that derby victory against Notts, but you know, they did take a late point, didn't they? MK last time out, another team whose game was called off this weekend. Are they going to stick around in the playoff places? They are clinging on to them by virtue of 1 point at the moment.
Yeah, well, they finished last season like a train, didn't they? Do you remember? So maybe they can do something similar this time. Look, Paul Cook's clearly not happy, even though they're easily in touch with the playoffs. Results have been too inconsistent for them to go up automatically. But he's been busy, hasn't he? I mean, he signed Sammy Braybrook on loan from Leicester, who's been superb for Newport County. That's a big one. Freddie Ladapo's come in. Tom Pierce, you remember him. He's a good, experienced defender. I think there's two or three others that have come in as well. They've just got little flaws, haven't they? They have lots of the ball, Chesterfield. They make the most passes in the league, but they get undone a little bit. They get undone from fast breaks, for example. I think they've let in 7 from counters this season. Their defenders have made mistakes. They've been stretched. They've conceded the most penalties in the division. They haven't defended set pieces particularly well either. So there's little things they can fix in the second half of the season. And also, they're sort of waiting for one of their forwards to catch fire. None of them have really set the world alight this season, the front players. So yeah, we'll see how they go. I think they've got a really good squad. The bench the other day, Ladapo was on it, Tom Naylor, Will Grigg, Vontae Daly Campbell. You know, these are good, experienced players. So yeah, I think they've got it in them to mount a promotion campaign, but this will be a tough game because Bromley are so solid at the moment. One stat that is worth taking notice of, though, which might actually put you off of backing Chesterfield to go up, for example, is they actually rank 17th for expected goals this season. They've scored over 13 more goals than the stats say they should have done. So is that sustainable over the second half of the season? That might be a question they're asking themselves during this window.
Might take a point in this game as well. Bromley absolutely flying, Sam. 7 wins in a row and they've got some cheek.
I don't know if I'd regaled this story. I've certainly told you that I did a bit of training with him, but I spoke to him about it at a game early in the season and he just looked at me. He basically never seen me before in his life and didn't have a clue who I was, which it was a nice moment. It was in the aftermath of, I think, him getting a winner or an equaliser in a game. And I told him this story and he just looked straight through me. maybe he'll be kinder to me.
What was your reaction to it? Did you tell him who you were then?
I just moved on in life, Clarkie. I just moved on. Good to see you, mate. Well done. maybe he'll change his tune once he hears that podcast back that we recently did, Clarkie, giving him our League 2 player of 2025. It's funny, as Clarkie was talking now, I'm just going to really simplify this. And I mean, at the moment, they're the best team in the division, aren't they? I mean, that's clear as day. They're 5 points clear, 11 wins in 12. They are absolutely flying. I don't know enough about the financial situation. I know what I've seen with my eyes, and it's a very, very good setup. They've clearly got other probably revenue streams with the stadium and with the surrounding area, with the bar that they've got there is great. And I'd imagine that the academy setup's pretty good and what have you. And it's well backed. I suppose what I'm saying here is, should we be surprised by this, or has this been coming, you know, after last season where they had a little bit of a push for the playoffs and didn't quite make that leap? But I think a lot of people in the game that know about, you know, the budgets and the ambitions of clubs probably would have foreseen this maybe being a potential this season. And on the pitch, I think, again, and yeah, I don't want to be disparaging about them, but basically you have got the best striker at putting the ball in the back of the net. So he turns games, drab games, into 1-0 wins or games that are in the balance. He can be the difference maker. You got Mitch Pinnock, who's one of the best deliverers of a ball, one of the best left foots in the lower divisions, putting it on the plate for him. 9 assists now for him. You've got a team collectively who are the best at set pieces in the division, 20 set piece goals, so they can bully you. They can score in that manner at will. And a centre-half, Swimney, who goes and attacks it brilliantly. He's got 6 goals. So they're not the most watertight. I think they will lose games between now and the end of the season. But I just think they have got so many fundamentals for a successful team in the bottom division. Absolutely spot on. They all know their roles. The other thing I want to say was Kabamba, who was brought in to kind of be a foil for Cheek when they're on the pitch together, but also be an option to replace Cheek if he's feeling the pace or needs taken out of the firing line. He's got 8 goals, Kabamba, as a guy who's essentially the bridesmaid and has scored 6 as a substitute. So he's come in to do a job and he's done it unbelievably well. So I think if you just factor in all those elements, and yeah, it's not probably the biggest squad in the division, but they've given themselves an unbelievable opportunity here. And if Cheek remains fit and probably those chaps I just mentioned, they're going to be very, very difficult to stop.
Certainly looks that way. Right, I'm going to get your predictions quickly, Clark, and then I'm going to let you go because I know you've got another assignment at 10 o'clock. Swansea-Birmingham.
Yep, Swansea-Birmingham. Right, so just quick score update from last time. So it's now me, I'm on 42, Sam's on 34, Matt, you're on 31. So you're catching up with Sam. Swansea-Birmingham stinks a 1-0.
What would you like for Exeter Stevenage? Poor old Exeter.
1-0 Exeter. They're going to bounce back from their 10-goal demolition with a clean sheet. And Swindon Salford?
Yeah.
2-1 Salford.
Oof, okay, that won't please Sam. Righty-ho. We'll let you go there, Clarky. Thank you. And you, we'll speak to you again next week. Sam, give me your prediction for Swansea-Birmingham, please.
I don't like doing it, but I kind of agree with everything Clarky said, apart from the last bit. Birmingham can't win away. Swansea have improved. I'm going 1-0 home win.
Okay. I'm going to go nil-nil. Exeter Stevenage, what do you reckon, Sam?
Yeah, I agreed with his sentiment there. Exeter back on the horse. Stevenage struggling for wins. 2-1, Grecians.
I'll go for 1-1 in that one. And I'll go first on Swindon Salford. I am going to say that will be a 1-0 win for Swindon. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with the outcome. And they have actually tightened up a bit, Salford. There's less fun and bad defending in their games as of late. But they beat Swindon 3-2 courtesy of a last-minute goal. I'm going for the ultimate reverse. 3-2, Swindon. Late goal. County ground. Raptures.
All right, I'll hold you to that. Before we do Tweet of the Week and leave you, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. If you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, or just tell somebody we're here, that would be much appreciated. Let's finish with a quick tweet of the week then, Sam. It comes from Wigan Athletics' Morgan Fox, who says, with a picture of the Wigan players celebrating in front of their supporters, as has become the style of the time. Under the lights in the FA Cup is always enjoyable. Brilliant support and a good performance. In the hat emoji, at Emirates FA Cup, at Latics official, blue circle emoji, white circle emoji. I know you're a fan of the hat emoji.
I'm a fan of the hat emoji. Would I have done this when I was playing? Probably not. The team photo, but it's a bit housery, isn't it? As the first response shows us, Mark Lawson's gone in two-footed straight off the bat. Do you know what I don't like? And I know, being a football man that you are, Matt Davis Adams, under the lights in the FA Cup is always enjoyable. No. 3 p.m. on a Saturday in the snow. with the snow mounted
up. Yeah.
Backed up, shovels at the ready. We had a bit of that, didn't we, at the weekend? I think the Macclesfield goal scorer was called by his manager Rooney in the week to come and shovel some snow off the pitch. So, no, I'm not having under the lights in the FA Cup. I'm having a league game under the lights, you know, at the business end of the season. But FA Cup, 3 p.m. Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah, my big criticism was that he's put in the hat. And he's put the word hat as well as the hat emoji. He's also tagged in the FA Cup, which is not for me either. But generally, not a bad effort, Morgan. 15.9K followers, hopefully. You'll get a few more. Also disappointing that his header photo is the same as his profile picture. It's a little bit lazy. But anyway, we don't mean to criticise you too much, Morgan. Well done to him. Well done to Wigan. My thanks to Adrian and Sam for their expertise and to you for your ears. Back with you next week. For now, it's goodbye.